Tactical NLP Podcast with me, Andy Smith. Something a little different this week. I was interviewed by social media expert Sarah Arrow of sarkemedia.com on how NLP can help with blogging and using social media. Here's the interview.
Hi everybody, this is Sarah from sarkemedia.com, and I've also got my birds on the blog hat on today as well. I'm going to be chatting to the very lovely Andy Smith from Coaching Leaders. And we're also international again because Andy's in France. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Sarah. Just trying to get my hand in the camera there. There we go.
So, Andy, I'm curious, what exactly is NLP?
Okay, well, NLP has been saddled with perhaps the least user-friendly name ever, neuro-linguistic programming. So I prefer to call it NLP, usually, when I'm talking to people about it. The best way to think of it, I think, is as a form of practical, non-academic psychology based on observing people, and particularly observing people who are really good at doing particular things and finding out how they do it. So started off with observing kind of genius therapists and modeling how they did things. But since then, there's been a lot of other applications in communication, health, business, sports psychology, and so on. So a form of practical psychology that anyone can use and benefit from without necessarily having to be an expert in it.
Okay, so knowing that, how did you get into NLP and coaching leadership?
Right, well, originally this is going back, 20 years. I was a hypnotherapist at that time. I was working as a hypnotherapist, and my original training in hypnotherapy was absolute rubbish, really. It wasn't very good. Prior to that, I was in IT, but I had a career switch. So, nevertheless, I found out I was actually okay at it and could get good results with people. And I was always looking for ways to improve what I was doing so I could help my clients better. And I met a couple of people who'd been trained in NLP. They were, as it's known, NLP practitioners, as they're called. And I was personally very impressed by them, and I read some books about it. Don't know what that was.
That was a motorbike on the A13 going past.
Oh, right, okay, that's fine.
yeah, it's only 400 yards away.
All right, okay. So I was reading up more and more about NLP. I met some people who I was impressed with. I tried out a couple of things from an NLP book on hypnosis transformation, transformations hypnotherapists. If you've never read it, go and find a copy and read it. It's really good. And the techniques that I was getting from that book, without actually having been trained in them, I tried them out with my clients, and I was getting better results than any of the stuff that I was trained in. So I thought, right, got to train in this. So I went and did a course, and then next following year I did the follow-up course, which is called NLP Master Practitioner, and the following year I trained as a trainer of NLP. And for a number of years, from 2000 onwards, I was training people to be NLP practitioners at the same time as I was working as a therapist, and gradually moving into coaching, gradually moving into executive coaching, and now I don't really see one-to-one clients. I work in corporates and I do corporate coaching and training, but most of what I do is actually writing books now and creating materials for other NLP trainers.
Brilliant. So you've got a real depth of understanding about NLP and communications and how it can be used to help people and to grow them?
More to help people than anything else. So people specialise in different areas, you know, marketing, communications and whatever. So, yeah, I've been working with NLP for 18 years now, so I've got a reasonable in-depth understanding. You know, I learn new stuff every day. And as I find out more about, for example, marketing or corporate communications, I find ways in which NLP is applicable to that as well.
Okay. So is it just the spoken word or just the written word that NLP can be applied to, or is there something more to it?
There is more to it. There are, it's not just words, so it's body language as well. It can be spoken words, it can be written words. For example, it can be things like voice tone. So depending on how you say something, an easy little example, where your voice goes at the end of a statement. So if it goes up, it's a question. If it goes straight along, it's a statement. If it goes down, it's a command. You understand this?
Right.
You understand this? You understand this. Like that, see?
Mm-hmm. And I've used every single one of those as a parent and as a pet owner yeah. on my dog and my kids.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So it's body language, it's how you think, it's how you see things in your mind, what you say to yourself, where you put your attention in your body, anything to do with the body or the mind, really, you can look at it through an NLP lens and maybe get some benefit.
Right, okay. So my next question is, let's apply this to blogging, social media, and general online. And what I'm thinking here is based on some of the things that I read in your book, Practical NLP, which I enjoyed very much. And what I find is online you seem to see very positive mindsets or very negative mindsets. It's very hard to kind of meet in the middle. And in your book you talk about transitioning from the why, as in when somebody leaves a comment and you think to yourself, why did they say that, to what were they thinking when they wrote that, and things like that. So yeah. How can we go from when we get a comment on our blog or a reply to a tweet or a Facebook update and we're not quite there because we're missing the body language, we're missing the tone, and how can we get from the why to the what here?
Right, okay. Well, as you've pointed out, with blog comments, with emails, with texts, with live chat, you've only got the words to go on. So you're missing all of the other stuff, the body language, the voice tone, which gives a context where you can interpret what the person actually means by those words. It's probably a good moment to mention, actually, that most people will probably have heard that thing of only 7% of communication is the words you say, and 38% is the voice tone, and 55% is the body language. Actually, if you were to look that up on Google, you'd see that's actually a massive misinterpretation of some studies by a guy called Albert Mehrabian. And try and explain to somebody how to bake a cake or how to do a particular move in jiu-jitsu or how to do anything, really, how to write a decent blog, just using body language or voice tone. You're going to need those words in there as well. So it's a bit of a misinterpretation. But what voice tone and body language do, and facial expression obviously as well, is provide a context in which somebody can understand what's being said. Now, if you don't have that, like on a blog comment, you're going to have to put your own interpretation on it. You're going to have to put your best guess. But we're almost sort of hardwired to be suspicious of naked comments like that. So our minds tend to automatically put the worst interpretation on it if we're not careful, if we're taken by surprise. And also, if we don't know the person who's commenting as well, you know, if you put a comment on my blog that could be construed as sort of negative or attacking or sarcastic. I probably just think, oh, it's Sarah, you know, she's having a laugh with me here, and I'll probably sort of type something reasonably humorous back. If it was somebody I didn't know, then the temptation would be to think, they're being horrible to me, and why are they doing that? So the first thing you need to do is to detach yourself emotionally from the situation. So if you are the kind of blogger who finds comments like that hurtful, you need to actually take a step back from them to get some emotional distance. And actually, this isn't so much NLP, although it's very compatible with NLP, but psychologists have found that actually physically taking a step back and getting some distance from your monitor, curiously enough, will actually make it shrink in importance in your mind. So you get some emotional distance from it as well. So do whatever it takes. But first of all, don't reply instantly. Okay? Get some time, get some distance. Allow yourself to calm down. So never, never, never reply to an email or a comment when you're angry. Well, one of the guys I've trained with talks about they should electrify the send button so that you only send the email when you really, really want to, because it hurts. That would save a lot of misunderstandings. So get some distance. Think about, okay, what else could they mean? Mm-hmm. Is there a possible positive interpretation? One of the principles of NLP is that everything we do has a positive intention behind it, at least for us. Okay, so that person, in typing that comment, they're making the best choice they're capable of in that situation, even if there are loads of other better choices available to them. Mm-hmm. They can't see them at the moment, so they're doing the best they can. So remember that. You might want to try putting yourself in their shoes. I mean, there's some fancy NLP jargon for this called assuming second position, but what they mean is put yourself in the other person's shoes. Mm-hmm. And think, okay, what could possibly be going through their mind to type this or to say something like that? What are they really after? What's behind it? What's the emotion behind it? Another way you could do it is, again, distancing yourself and think, okay, what do I want to be the result of this interaction? What do I want this person to actually do? What do I want them to change about their behavior? And what's the best thing I can do about this? Now, it may be what you want them to do is to just sort of sod off and you never hear from them again, in which case that may be the best thing for you to do is to, like, block them. Mm-hmm. Or it may be they've got a genuinely valid question. So the other day on Facebook, I put a link. I mentioned on somebody else's post something called restorative justice, which is where the criminal and the victim sort of sit down together, and the criminal gets to see that what they've done has affected a real person, and they have the chance to apologize and so on, which for a lot of crimes is actually having quite a good result in terms of reoffending rates and victims feeling better and so on. Now, this guy posted something really scornful about restorative justice, and I thought, oh, he's being really horrible to me here. But I assumed the best. I thought, maybe he doesn't actually know what it is. So I posted a link to it, and he went away and he looked at the website, and he came back and said, oh, okay, it's something quite different from what I thought it was. Looks quite good, something like that. So, result. I could have acted emotionally from that. I could have thought, he's being really nasty here, I'll block him, or you know, sever the relationship. I could have flamed him back, all sorts of things I could have done, but I didn't. So, think what the person is after. What are they needing to do by this? Maybe it is just feeding their ego, in which case you may be better off without them. Maybe you explain in your blog post what you were trying to explain. Maybe you've explained it badly. Maybe you've got a typo in a word out, which has left a different impression in the person's mind than the one you were trying to give. So try explaining your point in another way, maybe.
And it is quite often when you write something down and the way you visualize it in your mind and you're typing it down that you do miss a word or put a typo in, and then someone coming and seeing that with a fresh set of eyes can see it and interpret it differently. And of course, when you look at it, you don't see it because you've said it so many times over and over and over in your mind. But what I find quite interesting there was when you were saying put yourself in somebody else's shoes. I forget what you called it, the second person position.
Yeah, that's just jargon. I mean, I usually say, unless I'm actually training somebody in the technical skills of NLP, I just say, you know, put yourself in the other person's shoes.
Well, I read it in another book, and I can't even remember where I read it now. I read so much. That was one of the skills that Gandhi was attributed with for his success in negotiating and having extremely good negotiating skills. And that was because he could see the other person's position and think of counter arguments and situations where everybody came out with the outcome that they wanted. So to step back and distance yourself emotionally and then put yourself in that position is an incredibly powerful thing to do. And if you master it like Gandhi did, well, you're a world leader, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, of course, there's actually three positions that you need to take to understand any situation. One, obviously, is the second position, the other person's point of view. But there's also the first position, which is your own point of view. And there's the third one, which is the detached, where you can see both yourself and the other person and the interactions between them, so that you get a sense of, you know, when I do this, he does that, and vice versa. And each of those positions give you different information. So the danger would be if you get stuck in only one position, so that there are some people who are really, really good at adopting that second position and putting themselves in the other person's shoes. And just like Gandhi, they can see what the other person wants. They can sort of see through to their deepest desires and so on. And those people are called doormats, because what they're forgetting to do is go back to the first position and think about
what you... I've got a laugh at doormats, Andy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I sort of saved that up and sort of thought I'd hit you with it. And also the third position, so you can detach yourself emotionally and see the bigger picture and the context in which the disagreement is happening. Now, Gandhi could do all of those. So people who can only see the first position, only see their own point of view, they tend to be sort of bullies or insensitive. Second position, doormats. If they can only look at things from the third position, people will think they're cold and unemotional, and so on. So you need to kind of rotate around all three of those bases to be able to really understand the situation. If it's all right, Sarah, I just want to go back very quickly to that nasty commenter on the blog that you, the example that you were talking about, because another principle in NLP can be summed up as the meaning of your communication is the response that you get. In other words, no matter what you mean by what you're trying to say in words or in your blog or whatever, the only way you know whether your message has actually been received or not, as you intended it to be sent, is by how the other person responds. So if you said something that's intended to be a compliment, and the other person gets offended, then from their point of view, you've said something offensive. And in order for them to really get what you're saying, you need, it's your responsibility as the communicator to communicate it in a different way and keep trying different ways until they actually get it.
And while we're on the subject of communication, now, we need to get better communications in our writing so we avoid the misconceptions and getting the responses that less than making us happy and less than what we expect. And one of the things that I did was I removed the word not from my content, and that is incredibly hard to do. And when you write something, it's very natural because it's something you use as in every day. You say, don't do that, and you've got the not at the end of don't. And then you say things like, don't forget. So I've had to find language and flip it around. So instead of saying don't forget, I say things like remember to share and remember to leave a comment and things like that. Now, are there other things we can do in our communications so that we come across better and we get the responses that we want?
So just to make it clear for anyone viewing, the reason that you've eliminated that word not is because when you say not to do something, you're putting the idea of doing whatever it is you're saying not to do in their minds, right? So instead of telling them what you don't want them to do, you're telling them what you want them to do. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly
right. Yeah. Right. I mean, there are still one or two legitimate uses, I think. So if somebody is, if your audience tends to be motivated by avoiding trouble or, generally away from motivated, if you say something like, don't miss out, then that can be, oh, I don't want to miss out on this, I better do it. As long as you follow it up with what you actually want them to do. Don't miss out, bye today, whatever. So some other tips for communication?
Yeah, go on then. Give us your three best ones about how people can use.
Well, I don't know if they're my three best ones. They're the three best ones that I came up with in the couple of minutes before we started to be. They're pretty good anyway. Right. So, first of all, don't, and this is particularly true in written communication, don't use loads and loads and loads of long words, long abstract words, long abstract concepts, because that will make the person switch off. The more sensory language you can hit your reader with, the more those words sort of sing out of the screen, and the brighter the images you can make in the reader's mind, they're going to have a more solid impression of what you've written. They're going to have more of an emotional response. They're going to remember it. They're going to feel more like responding to whatever kind of call to action you put in or whatever kind of advice you put in. Whereas long kind of Latinate or Greek derived abstract conceptual words, that kind of communication can really cause a deficiency in the mental processes of the. It's hard to do. It's hard to do in a sustained way. But if we were to keep on like that, everyone would switch up, because you can't form a picture of a deficiency. You can't form a picture of communication. You can form a picture of an example of it, i.e., somebody speaking to each other. But if you can put actually the images you want in the person's mind to start with, you can talk about the images you want them to see and describe them, or talk about what you want them to hear, you actually know what you're putting into their minds rather than leaving it to chance by some sort of very abstract conceptual kind of language. Like sort of corporate reports or scientific research papers, really, really, really hard to read. And I generally drift off about five lines in and don't get the point of them. And if you're the sort of writer, which I am to a certain extent, that tends to naturally think in terms of abstract concepts, you've really got to discipline yourself to use shorter words, shorter sentences, and standard writing advice, like not use the passive voice, for example, use the active voice. Sensory language, and see if you can get some visual words, some hearing type words, and some feeling words into every paragraph. Okay, that's tip number one.
It can be really hard to get the taste words in, and you have to slip them in very carefully, as in, that was very tastefully done. Yes, I got it in. It can be really quite hard, I find, to get that one in. I can manage the touch and even the smell to a certain extent, but it can be hard with taste.
Yeah, so what you're saying is don't slip in the tongue unless you're absolutely convinced that it's a good idea, right?
two more, Andy. Yeah, two more things we can do.
Yeah, okay. Right, I think I've mentioned the second one already, which is put yourself in your audience's shoes. Think about what sort of person is reading this, how are they feeling when they read it, what images do you want your communication to conjure up? So what sort of person are they? How are they going to be feeling? What do they need to hear that will make them benefit from what you're saying, or make them get the message, or make them, if it's like a bit of marketing communication, what will make them actually act on it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's about considering the emotion of putting yourself in their shoes, really. Final one, there's a thing in NLP that people may have heard of called chunking, which is about what sort of size or level of information are you dealing with. Is it the big picture? Is it details? Is it somewhere in between? Is it moving about between them? So when you're writing about something that you know about and that you're passionate about, it's easy to get lost in the details, particularly if you're a detail-focused sort of person and it's something that's really interesting to you. And if you lose sight of the big picture of the message that you want to get across, again, your blog post, for example, is not going to have the impact that you wanted it to have. So you need to keep your big picture in mind. What am I writing this for? What's the one thing that I want people to get from it? And maybe even like write it on a little post-it note and stick it on the top of your computer screen so you don't forget.
That's good advice.
Yeah, so remember the big picture. Don't get lost in the details.
Okay, Andy. So where can we find you online? Where can we find your books? I'm going to leave a link in the post anyway. But if people just want to not look at the post and click the links and just want to rush over to Amazon, and where else can they find you?
Okay, well, my website and my blog are coachingleaders.co.uk, which you'll be able to get to. I've got a web store with a few products in there at the moment. Well, a few products aimed at the general reader, quite a lot aimed at the NLP trainer and buff, but more are getting added to that all the time. My books are Kindle ebooks at the moment, which I love because they're fairly easy to publish and people actually buy them, which is nice. So if you probably the easiest thing to do is to go to your local Kindle store, whichever one that is, and type in NLP and then Smith, and you'll find the two or three NLP books that I've written already. Practical NLP is the sort of flagship one at the moment. That's the one you've read.
And, yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was Kevin, actually, wasn't it? Left a very nice review, I think, on Amazon for that. Yeah, so if you put Practical NLP Smith into the search box, that will come up number one in the results.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Andy, and I really appreciate the time you've spent with me this evening, and I'm going to post this up in about 3 minutes, and I will add your links underneath it, so if anybody who's watching this directly on the blog, they will be able to see where to find you. If not, everybody else will find you on YouTube. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Sarah. It's been an absolute pleasure. Let's do it again soon. See you.
All right. Take care, Andy. Bye.
That's it for this week's podcast. Back to our normal podcast format next time.